Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoyed the program.
There's been a development over the last week. The Vatican has announced a plan officially to unite traditional Anglicans with the Roman Catholic Church. The largest single group of traditional Anglicans in Australia are in the Torres Strait. But what does all this mean for Australia as a whole, and indeed for Anglicans throughout the world? Well, for the first half of this hour, I managed to corral two people who know something about this. Anglican theologian Charles Sherlock was a member of ARCIC from 1991 to 2005. That's the Anglican Roman Catholic International Commission. He's presently the assistant curate to the Anglican bishop in Bendigo. And Bishop Peter Elliott, the Roman Catholic auxiliary bishop of Melbourne for the southern region, has been a friend and advisor to traditional Anglicans seeking union with Rome. Bishop Elliott, can I begin with you? What exactly is the Roman Catholic Church saying to Anglicans through the forthcoming Apostolic Constitution?
Well, we're saying welcome home, but with a concrete offer of a distinctive structure within the Catholic Church where these Anglicans can retain elements of worship, spirituality and culture that are compatible with Catholic faith and morals.
So what's being asked of those Anglicans who intend to form a formal communion with the Roman Catholic Church?
They'll be asked basically three things. First of all, that they accept the whole of the Catholic faith set out in the authoritative Catechism of the Catholic Church, the post-Vatican II statement of the faith. Secondly, they'll be asked to receive the sacrament of confirmation to incorporate them into the Church and complete and perfect their baptism. And thirdly, those of their clergy who sincerely seek priesthood would need to be reordained.
When you say those of their clergy who seek priesthood would need to be reordained, what about Anglican bishops?
If they're married men, they could apply for priesthood. But it's been made clear by Rome already that we don't envisage that there would be married Catholic bishops. That's not part of the classical tradition of the East or the West.
So in effect, they would be in the position of, for example, the former Bishop of London who converted to Catholicism is now actually a Monsignor, a priest, but a Monsignor.
Monsignor Leonard, yes, of course.
In terms of clergy coming over, you said ordination. Is that still holding the line that was Catholic teaching, I think, under Leo XIII, that Anglican orders were null and void and therefore require reordination?
Yes, that line has never changed. There are some complex questions around it that have developed in the last 100 years, but the practical policy of the Church is complete adherence to that line.
In what sense is this going to be a big or a small movement within Australia from your point of view, Bishop Elliott?
I would expect it is a small movement, at least to start with.
We're not talking about thousands and thousands of people converting to Catholicism.
Not in Australia. In some other parts of the world, yes, but not Australia. Here it'd be very, very small numbers, mainly based around the traditional Anglican communion, which is already broken with Anglicanism, and some members of the Forward in Faith movement.
That is, in fact, an important point you've made there, isn't it? That the traditional Anglican communion has already broken away from the Anglican communion, and this is, in fact, the chief or principal group that's been negotiating with Rome for this union.
That is true. Their history goes back 30 years or so, and it's a convergence of various groups of disaffected Anglicans who moved out over the ordination of women priests and now women bishops.
And so it's not actually, in one sense, aimed at the Anglican communion, this extension?
Well, here we have to say yes and no, because the second group, Forward in Faith, they are Anglicans who've hung on within Anglicanism, particularly those of a classical Anglo-Catholic adherence.
Charles Sherlock, can I bring you in here? You're a member of ARCIC, the International Commission on Roman Catholic and Anglican Dialogue. An Anglican, though,
yes.
How do you interpret what's going on here?
Well, I think I'd have two main comments. Firstly, I welcome the fact that the Vatican, or the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith, is talking in ecclesial matters. So I welcome the fact that this move talks about structures. It's not just individuals, but it's groups, a diocese, a group of people who already have a relationship with a bishop. That's good. I note also, by the way, that in the phrasing used, the Pope describes these as Anglican clergy and faithful, which I think is an interesting view of them being clergy now. You watch these sorts of things. On the other hand, I do have some concerns about the matter from an ecumenical point of view, like the phrase return home that Bishop Elliot used suggests that the essence of Christian unity is returning to one church. I would have hoped that the movement of Christian unity is about all churches repenting of what they've done in the past that is against the will of Christ and looking to a wider, deeper and larger church to which all of us need to be converted to. But I would say, as a member of ARCHIC, that we've agreed that in that church, the distinctive ministry of the Bishop of Rome will have a place, that doctrinal issues about grace, justification, ordained ministry and so on, all of us need to continue to repent, be converted towards ways of understanding that will be truly ecumenical. So my difficulty with this move is that it can sound like, you know, the Roman Catholic tradition saying we are basically right in the sense that others need to come to us for them to be right. I welcome this move if it helps give communion to those who are already disaffected. But on the other hand, I'm wary if it means that the Roman Catholic Church is somehow straying away from that deeper, wider vision of looking towards where God, Christ is calling us.
Bishop Elliot, can I bring you in there? Do you have a reaction or response to what Charles is saying there?
Yes, I sympathise to a certain extent with what Charles says, but we have to be quite honest here. A few years ago, the Catholic Church issued a document, Dominus Iesus, where we do maintain our position that we are the one authentic Church of Christ, that the unity Christ willed has never been lost within that communion with Rome, with the Pope. But I think the change in the last 40, 50 years is we've opened out and we don't put the fortress doors up and say, come in with your hands up. It's more a welcoming approach. So there would be a difference, certainly, between myself and Charles on this, but I wouldn't overemphasise it.
Charles?
Well, I actually think Dominus Iesus was a very good document directing us to what it calls the unicity of the Church, cannot avoid the question of really being one, but I had never read that document as a return home sense.
There's also been criticism of the Catholic Church that from other Christians who say that Catholics sometimes see ecumenism as the absorbing of other groups as opposed to the partnering or the joining of ecclesial communions.
I would say that the provision the Pope is making for Anglicans can be interpreted, A, in terms of coming home historically, considering that Anglicanism comes out of the mainstream of Western Christianity, Western Catholicism. So in that sense, the coming home has a historical meaning, and which need not be too offensive, particularly to very high church Anglicans who think in those categories still. And secondly, the provision is for a variety in the church and a legitimate variety, which we already have within Catholicism with our Eastern rites and our various big spiritual movements. And it's in that framework of variety, not a monolith, that Anglican Catholics will find a welcome place.
But this is something I would very much like to ask quite specifically about how this union is perceived, because those who study the Catholic Church know, of course, that Maronite Catholics are an Arab and Aramaic-speaking rite, which has been part of the Church since its beginning, they would argue, and there are other churches which are uniate who have the Greek Rite or the Ukrainian Rite, and these are all parts of the big Roman Catholic Church and are not just Latin Rite in the sense that, you know, most Australian Catholics are Latin Rite. Is that how the Anglicans are to be received as a rite of the Catholic Church?
No, not a rite. They'd be regarded as what are called Roman Catholics as distinct from Ukrainian or Maronite Catholics. But they'll be Roman Rite Catholics of the Anglican usage.
So does that mean they'd keep their Eucharist, their prayer books?
Yeah, well, they'd keep a liturgy that would be very similar to the prayer book. We already have pilot projects running in the United States of Anglican Rite Catholic parishes. I've met the parish priest of one of these communities in Texas, and here we have a liturgy which is very much like the Anglo-Catholic form of worship. The first Eucharistic prayer, the Roman canon, is used, but a lot of other elements in the liturgy come from the prayer book, which itself was derived largely from the pre-Reformation missals in England.
Charles Sherlock, there's a sense in which I imagine some Anglicans will be relieved that traditional Anglicans will rejoin the Catholic Church, because certainly from a progressive Anglican point of view, that creates, I suppose, space for a more progressive view within the Anglican Church, does it not?
In the Church of England, but probably not elsewhere. In the rest of the Anglican Communion, the groups that Bishop Elliott's speaking about are already outside. And in fact, in Australia, a General Synod canon has specified quite carefully our relationships with the traditional Anglican Communion, as it's called. In the Church of England, however, where Forward in Faith has, as I understand it, a reasonably significant following, and there are three what are called loosely flying bishops, that is, they don't have dioceses geographically, but they have pastoral charge for congregations who cannot accept women as priests. In England, if they all moved into the Roman Catholic Communion, then that certainly would affect the character of the Church of England. It would lose its conservative, more Anglo-Catholic end. If the Church of England, over the next 5 or 6 years, you know, shifted in nature, then that certainly would affect the Anglican Communion as a whole.
So your perception is that in England this could be significant,
yes,
in shaping the Anglican Church of England. Is it the same case with the Episcopal Church, do you think, in the United States?
No. I was on a group that tried to keep contact with people who had an Anglican background. At last count, I think there were 56 different churches. Now, they've been slowly coming together in the last 2 or 3 years, largely over the ordination of a homosexual bishop issue.
That was Bishop of New Hampshire, Jim Robinson, yes.
Yes, but that group is already largely outside the Episcopal Church. And like in Australia, I don't know the situation now, but certainly, say, 10 years ago, there were 3 or 4 different traditional Anglican groups who were more critical of each other than they were of the Anglican Church of Australia. Now, I guess if, in God's good providence, enabling them to come into fellowship with one another through this move towards Rome, well, I might have my preferences, but I'd prefer people to be in communion with each other than not.
Would it be fair to describe that you're of an evangelical persuasion yourself?
Yes, but in the classical sense. I'm not a West Californian, you know, no liturgy, no drums, no vestments type.
So
I mean, in some ways I would be regarded as, I suppose, a bit liberal in that, you know, I've seen as part of my vocation to be serious about dialogue with Roman Catholics. I'm seen as a bit liberal because I've been married to my parish priest for 20-odd years.
She is also the dean of the cathedral, for Catholics who are listening, yes.
Yes, but on the other hand, I'm the secretary of the Liturgy Commission and regarded as pretty conservative in wanting to say, you know, the Eucharist is about the death and resurrection of Christ and let's fit anything else around it. You know, the reading of Holy Scripture is fundamental and we mustn't play around with that. So, I don't know, I just try to be myself.
I was just interested to identify, because the Anglican Church is, again, a diverse communion,
yeah,
where you were sitting in it and where your personal sensibilities might be in regard to this.
One thing I think, going back to the ecumenical question, I think a really important thing theologically, and this lies behind the argument in Arkic's last statement, the Mary text, is that theology, I think, is best done from the future backwards rather than just the past forwards. That is to say, you try and discern, according to the scriptures and what we've been given in the past, what is it God's calling us to be? And I think when you think that way, things like the dogma of the Assumption start making sense.
I see that you're framing that in terms of, though, the Anglican-Roman Catholic dialogue, which is one thing.
Yes.
And then another matter, which is disaffected Anglican churches like the traditional Anglican Communion coming into communion with the Rome. They're two different things.
That's right. It's if you like, you might welcome a bit of real politic, which does some good, but if that stands in the way of the longer-term agenda of living, you know, for the vision, always with a sense of humility and we're on the way, that would disturb me. And I think I'll be interested to actually read the Apostolic Constitution. How it's written will be important to me. If it's written with a sense of, you know, Mother Church teaches her dependent children to obey better and all the rest of it, I'll be very disappointed. I think that the current Pope is a lot better theologian than that, but it was written with a sense of humility. Here is an opportunity. We believe under God that we should take this opportunity, but we haven't lost sight of a wider and deeper vision. I would really welcome that.
Bishop Elliott.
I'd also emphasise compassion. We have a very compassionate Pope, and he's reaching out to a lot of people who have really suffered through this. You see, I come myself from Anglicanism, and I grew up in the Anglo-Catholic tradition.
Indeed, your father was an Anglican vicar, I believe.
He was vicar of Glen Huntly, Leslie Llewellyn Elliott, and he suffered...
A parish I know well, as it happens.
he suffered a lot in his last years of his life because he opposed the ordination of women, and he couldn't come to terms with that. And he would rejoice to see this day, because it's a reaching out and a healing for people who in conscience can't accept a whole lot of things, not just that, and who want peace and happiness. And I think Christianity is about that.
Indeed, I note that on the bench of Roman Catholic bishops in Australia alone at the moment, there are at least two who came from Anglican backgrounds.
That's true, yes.
And likewise, there has been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing in the churches. I recall also the Prime Minister was once a Catholic and now an Anglican. There's a bit of wash backwards and forwards, it seems.
There is indeed among the... Yes, there certainly is these days, yes.
Can I ask, Bishop Elliott, in this model which is being proposed for Anglicans, it strikes me, and I've seen in a couple of blogs, the idea that is this also a model that might be applied to the Lefebvreist movement, to the Latin Rite Catholics?
Well, that would certainly be possible. We already have the structures in the church in canon law of military bishops who have jurisdiction over a big area and can move from diocese to diocese looking after their own people. We also have the personal prelature of the Holy Cross, of the great movement of Opus Dei, and that's an option, actually, I think, that has helped Rome envisage what can be done for these Anglicans.
But again, at the bottom line, I notice there's been a lot of media hype about this. This is not the end of the Anglican Church as we know it.
Oh, certainly not. That's ridiculous. This is a pastoral provision for a very small number of Anglicans in the worldwide Anglican Communion. We also have to be aware that there's a very large group of evangelical Anglicans who are struggling with similar issues and questions now, particularly focused around the Diocese of Sydney.
Of course, and that is indeed striking that you see movements within the Anglican Church who on many levels would not agree in terms of liturgy, for example, but who would find a lot of common ground when it comes to their position on women and on their position on human sexuality.
Yes, well, I sit on the local dialogue with evangelicals and Pentecostals and Catholics here, and I find a lot of common ground and real Christian fellowship with the men and women who are Bible-believing Christians. I think any good Catholic is supposed to be a Bible-believing Christian somehow.
So, Charles, can I return to you? Are you reassured that Anglicans need not think this is a takeover?
Oh, yes and no. I mean, I'll wait to see the Constitution, I think. I mean, in Australia, the most significant part of the traditional Anglican Communion from an Anglican point of view is the Torres Strait, because there was this schism there in 1998.
There was an alternative bishop set up there, of course.
That's right, and that's what caused it. But they were both, in a sense, in communion with us, if difficulties with each other. But one of them has become part of the traditional Anglican Communion.
Bishop Gaya Hankin, I think.
Yes, and then David Passy, who's a very good theologian. One of the difficulties is that the Torres Strait, becoming Christian, is a primary way by which their culture was preserved, and that eventually is what led to the Mabo judgment, because Eddie was a priest. Now, that schism, unfortunately, just when you think we're getting somewhere with reconciliation, you know, really spoils it. Now, if this move from Rome enables them all to settle down a little bit and live together as Christians, albeit of two different communions, but now not in a rivalry sense, but Anglicans and Roman Catholics who have a long-standing sense of historical allegiance, as Bishop Elliott has rightly pointed out, and in the last 40 years, a growing sense of dialogue, that would be a distinctive good contribution to Australian well-being and the pride and proper place and heritage of the Indigenous people.
So just to clarify, what you're saying here is that the traditional Anglican church in the Torres Strait, the one that separated out in the schism in 98, is likely to become part of this union with the Roman Catholic Church. That's what you're suggesting?
I haven't got a clue. I don't know. I'm sorry, but if this move assists in the Torres Strait, there to be a better relationship between Anglicans and Roman Catholics there, I would welcome it.
If you were able to ask the bishop any questions that are niggling away, what would you be asking right now?
Oh, two. One is, part of the apostolic constitution, as I understand it, will be allowing ordinariates, as they're going to be called, like a sort of a diocese, to have a house of formation for their own seminarians. Now, to me, that implies that they expect these Anglican rite groups to have an ongoing tradition. You don't set up a house of formation unless you think you're going to be continuing to form seminarians for 50 to 100 years. So I'd be very interested to know, is that the way they're thinking? And secondly, will new seminarians be able to become seminarians when they're married? And in the new group, will seminarians who've been ordained as single men be able to be married?
Bishop Elliott.
When we look at the first question, I think, yes, this is not just an ad hoc solution. It's a structure that has an open future, and that if you put your finger rightly on that matter, Charles, of formation of seminarians. The question of a married clergy is another issue altogether. I would not envisage seminarians in some future Anglican use seminary as being married or preparing for marriage after orders. We will make the provision available through this structure that already is in place of offering ordination to married Anglican clergy. But I would doubt whether the celibacy would be eliminated highly.
Bishop, may I ask, there, it strikes me that in the Maronite rite, there remains a married clergy in the Catholic Church. Certainly in Lebanon, the Maronites are married. And I know that in major cities in Australia, there are married Catholic clergy who are of Lebanese, the Maronite rite, who have their wives and children with them. Is it impossible to imagine an Anglican rite which permitted a married clergy?
But it's not a rite, and that's the point I go back to. These Anglicans who come in through this structure into communion with Rome are Roman Catholics, whereas the Eastern Christians who are Catholics come under a separate code of canon law and provisions also for specific rites.
And when you say canon law there, just for our listeners who may not be entirely familiar, that's the body of law that governs the Latin Rite Church, which is...
There's two codes, two books. There's the Latin Rite, the Roman Rite Code of Canon Law, and then there's a parallel volume for the Eastern Rites, yes.
And so Anglicans would come under the Latin Rite laws.
Yes, the first one, yes.
Which would mean, therefore, celibacy would be required of its priests as one of those effects.
Yes.
And a second question, you talked earlier about the liturgy people would use. In terms of the rite, or the I won't use the word rite, but the word liturgy will be permitted, I'm struggling to sort of get a sense of what that will mean. Like, there are two basic families in the Anglican Communion, one going back to England, one going back to America. They've been complicated by the Anglo-Catholic revival of the 19th century, as I know Bishop Elliott is very familiar with, and more complicated in recent years by changes to modern English, then a rebellion against the whole idea of prayer books in some circles, so that the diversity in Anglican practice, let alone the diversity amongst schismatic groups, how will that be handled?
We already have a special usage that the Vatican has recognised in North America in these Anglican Rite parishes, and it's a combination of the American prayer book, the Serum Rite, and the Roman Rite. I would say that you'd have something adapted for each country or area, and in Australia it would be much closer probably to the 1662 prayer book in the form probably of the English Missal.
Thank you. And I mean, my hope, by the way, would be that when these are constructed, that the Congregation of the Doctrine of Worship seriously looks at Archic's agreements on the Eucharist to see if the new prayers can be fully in accord with that. That, to me, would be a really welcome step, saying, yes, there's a bit of realism and welcoming here, but we're also keeping in mind our ecumenical commitments.
Yes, I would imagine that would be the case. We also have another liturgical consideration late next year for the whole of the English-speaking world. new translation of the Roman Rite comes in, which is much closer in style and quality and dignity and accuracy to the Anglican tradition. So
it's not causing happiness amongst Anglican liturgists, let me say, but anyway, in terms of style, I think you're right.
I think style, at least, we can say, I agree on that.
Can I ask, Bishop, in terms of looking at the history behind this, and Charles, you might like to comment on this too, that for those who are not terribly familiar with the last 150 years of Anglicanism and the relationship between the Catholic Church and the Anglican Church in England, there is a long history behind what's happening now, isn't there? Bishop Elliott.
Oh, yes, it goes back earlier, actually. There's always been within Anglicanism a kind of Catholic party and tendency. It started to rise to ascendancy in the time of Charles I, and then the Cromwell era chopped it off, and then it gradually rose up a very wonderful evangelical form in Methodism, but that went out of Anglicanism, alas. And then in the 1830s, you have the Oxford movement, which triggered off this high church revival, which ends up in Anglo-Catholicism.
And which influenced much of Australia, except Sydney in particular.
Yes, I think that because of the structure of the colonies and life, many clergy and their families left England and came to other countries and brought with them that Oxford movement tradition.
That's true of Newcastle and Adelaide and their descendants in the Anglican Church. And it's not true of Sydney or Melbourne and their descendants, because the four original bishops had different leanings.
That's right.
But especially since the change into modern English in the 1970s, that change of style has significantly reduced the differences, and especially the adoption of a Eucharist, which everybody was happy with from 77 onwards, with a classical structure. So Anglo-Catholics didn't feel they had to keep adding bits to 1662.
That's right.
But the freedom that that's given, I think I'd have to say honestly, has led to a diversity of local use, which is now, I think, starting to stretch the bounds of what I would see as desirable for authentic communion.
Bishop Elliott, can I ask, though, given that conversation and where it's gone, what rite exactly would be used by Anglicans who come into communion? Which one do you choose, given there's a diversity across the Anglican Church already?
Looking at the constituency of this future group as it coalesces, I think it would be more in the conservative Anglo-Catholic style of worship.
The English Missal, as it were.
English Missal, but with major elements of the post-Vatican II liturgy, like prayers of the faithful and things like that, popped in. And also, probably celebrated, as we see in the United States in these parishes of Anglican use, mass celebrated facing the altar rather than the people.
Facing east.
Because mass facing the people is also, I believe, part of the television culture.
I think it's a helpful part of the television culture.
And that discussion goes right on across the church, doesn't it, really?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And when you think about the web and interactive things that young people are used to, the challenge for the church in terms of shaping authentic worship, true to the gospel, the Catholic tradition, and according to the scriptures, in a different culture, that's a really biggie.
Bishop Elliott, you wanted to make a comment there, I heard.
Well, we're working on that because liturgy and culture go together. Certainly the predominant trend within Catholicism from the Pope down is for a more mystical, reflective and spiritual liturgy. We've swung away from the massive variety we had 30 years ago, not long after Vatican II. That is an evident trend.
Bishop, are you saying that Catholics will need to put their maracas and guitars away?
I think in years to come there'll be less of that. Let me put it that way.
There's a swing to a more traditional, more classic type of liturgy, is what you're saying.
And that will be affected by the rather recent provision for the celebration of the traditional Latin Mass, too.
And indeed, for Anglicans, Charles, I presume that that's not going to be a difficulty, those who decide to come into union with the Church, with the Roman Catholic Church.
I suppose not. I hope they find it helpful. Like, I love the Book of Common Prayer, but I can't see myself advocating a new congregation using it, nor can I see myself advocating an Anglican who's been catechised and come to a proper faith being formed into that. I just think we really do need to think more seriously about continuing to change the cultures. And so as a liturgist, I must say, I'm not thrilled about Liturgicam Aetheticam. I'm not thrilled either about just, you know, shoddy imagining the house churches sitting around on lounges playing guitars. It wasn't like that in the first century. That's nice if you like, but it's not church.
Bishop Elliot, I know that among some of my own friends, some wags have commented that the likely result of absorbing Anglican churches into the Roman Catholic community could be an explosion of unexpected good taste.
I would hope that were the case. Anyone who sees my private chapel remarks, but oh, how Anglican it looks.
Bishop Peter Elliot and Charles Sherlock, I thank you both for being part of the program.
God bless.
Anglican theologian Charles Sherlock there, who was a member of ARCIC, the Anglican Roman Catholic International Commission, from 1991 to 2005. And also Bishop Peter Elliot, the Roman Catholic Auxiliary Bishop of Melbourne.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. You can download your favourite Sunday night interviews from our website at abc.net.au/sundaynights with an S. Thank you for listening.